Today's shiur will focus on the Chag HaPurim that's coming up, and we'll discuss two things that Bnei Yisrael were nichshal in, two things that they did averus in, and how Klal Yisrael came to do tshuva in these two things. I'm going to discuss a letter that the Michtav Melio, this is Rabbi Elio Dessler, it's sent, and it's brought down in the first volume of the Michtav Melio, which was put out after he passed away. It was put out by a Talmud of his, Rabbi Carmel, Rabbi Aryeh Carmel, who was a Talmud Muvig of Rabbi Elio Dessler. Rabbi Elio Dessler is the one who started the yeshiva and kolel in Gateshead. And later he was a mashgiach in the Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Brak. And he was one of the leading mashgichim and bali machshava, people who had great depth in thinking of Jewish philosophy. And he's responding. They give the background here of what his letter is responding to. His letter is responding to a letter that was sent to him, and the person who sent the letter to Rabbi Elio Dessler was complaining that the Gedolim of the past generation, if they would have told people to go to Eretz Yisrael, many Jews would have been saved from the Holocaust. Now, as he was blaming the destruction of the Jews in Europe on the Gedolei Yisrael, on the leaders of the Jewish people, that they should have told everybody leave to Israel, and if you'll leave to Eretz Yisrael, they would have been saved. So it's like their fault that it happened. So he says here, this is from Rabbi Aryeh Carmel, says that the person who wrote this letter doesn't realize, or he forgot, or he's not aware that the Jews in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, that got saved during the Second World War, that was a ness. In other words, we have a rule, ein somchen al ness. You can't rely on a miracle. So the person who wrote the letter said, well, why didn't the Gedolim tell everybody, move to Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael was a nest that they were saved. Rommel, who was the great general from Germany, who was called the Desert Fox, he was going through North Africa on his way to Eretz Yisrael, and everybody who lived in Eretz Yisrael thought that the end is here. In fact, there's a famous story that they had blackouts in Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv. They were afraid that the German Air Force, what was it called? The Luftwaffe, that they would bomb the cities that were in Eretz Yisrael. There was a blackout. And during this blackout, the Panovich Rav, Rav Kahaneman, was going around and he was getting financial support for the yeshiva that he wanted to build on the top of the hill in Bnei Brak that overlooks the whole Bnei Brak. And people told him, Panovich Rav, you lost your mind. They thought he was deranged. How could you think about building a yeshiva now when Rommel is coming from North Africa, and we're afraid that the planes of the German army are going to bomb and there's blackouts? This is a time to collect for yeshivas, to build a yeshiva. They thought, as the expression is, that he lost it. And the Panovich Rav responded, you're wrong. He says, before I came to Eretz Yisrael, I visited the Chafetz Chaim. And I came there during Shalashudis. I spent a Shabbos with the Chafetz Chaim in the city of Radin. And it was known that when the Chafetz Chaim, during Shalashudis, he would say on the Parsha, and if he would repeat a pasuk over and over, that pasuk had a message. Somebody in the room had to hear that pasuk. And what was the pasuk that the Chafetz Chaim said during that Shalashudis that the Panovich Rav was there? Ubahar Tzion Tia Pleita Vahoya Kodesh. That in the Mount Zion, referring to Eretz Yisrael, Tia Pleita, that Israel during the second, this is how the Panovich Rav understood what the Pasuk was, what it meant. And as Chavetz Chaim didn't explain what he meant with this Pasuk, the Panovich Rav understood the message that of a heart see on Tia Pleita, we will get saved. The Jews living in Eretz Yisrael will get saved from Hitler Yimach Shemoy, from the Nazis Yimach Shemam. But there's one condition, Vahoya Kodesh. There has to be holiness. There has to be Kedusha. If just the opposite, you're telling me, why am I building a yeshiva during the Second World War when there's blackouts in Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv? Just the opposite. That's the time to build Kedusha. Because only if we build yeshivas, if we build holiness in Eretz Yisrael, will we merit, will we have the schus to get saved from the Nazis Yimach Shemam. And so he built the yeshiva in Bnei Brak, and on the top, over, I had the schus to see it. You could see it if you go to Bnei Brak and you go to the Pomacher Yeshiva. On top of the doors, in the entranceway to the yeshiva, is this pasuk, Vahar, which is from Navi, Ubahar Tzion Tia Pleita Vahoya Kodesh. The Panovich Rav built the yeshiva in Bnei Brak, and Rommel, by a miracle, was defeated in North Africa, and he never made it to Eretz Yisrael. Had he made it to Eretz Yisrael, he would have destroyed, they would have had a Holocaust in Eretz Yisrael. So pertaining to our letter over here, so Rabbi Carmel, the student of Rav Eliyahu Dessler, says that the writer who was criticizing the Gedolim, why didn't they tell everybody to go to Eretz Yisrael? They didn't tell them, number one, because going to Eretz Yisrael was dangerous. It was only a miracle that saved the Jews. By natural way, Hitler wanted to destroy, Hitler Yimach Shemoy wanted to destroy all Jews all over the world. Israel, it was one of his targets. He knew that there's a lot of Jews there, and he'll kill them, he'll destroy them. So it was a miracle. And also, if they would have told the Jews to go, does it mean that people would have listened? He's saying that the writer was criticizing not correctly. But what did, this is Rabbi Carmel's opinion. But let's see what the Michtav Melio himself said. So the Michtav Melio said that, I'm going to translate into English what this letter says. He says, I see from you, the writer, that you believe that all the Gedolei Yisrael, whose actions were totally l'shem shemaim, for the sake of heaven, and they were the greatest Jewish thinkers and the greatest Jewish tzaddikim that we had, and every time they met, the Gedolei met together, there's a pasuk that says Hashem nitzav badas keil, that Hashem sits together, he stands. When the Gedolim, for example, when a Beis Din sits down to decide, should this person be killed or not killed? Was he Mechal Shabbos? Did he murder someone? So there's someone there who makes sure that the Dayanim come out with the right answer. By secular courts, you don't have that. They could make mistakes. Many times we find today there's DNA evidence that someone was killed. They thought he did something wrong, and he didn't do it. Somebody else did it. He was framed. But by Beis Din, when Beis Din takes someone's life, it's only because Hashem is with them, making sure they do not make a wrong psak. So he's using that idea. When the Gedolei met together to decide on what Klal Yisrael should do, Hashem was with them. And who were the Gedolei? The Chafetz Chaim, Rab Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, Rab Chaim Brisker, Rab Boruch Ber Leibowitz, and Vaod Vaod, and many other Gedolim. He says, we have no idea. We're so small. We have no idea how great these giants were. And to say that all these Gedolim, and not only these Gedolim, but the previous generation, like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and the great Gedolim of the previous generation, before the Chofetz Chaim, to say that all of them made a mistake, chas v'sholem, you cannot say such a thing. In other words, if they said they didn't tell the Jews to leave Europe, that's what Hashem wanted them to tell the Jews. He didn't. Hashem guided them not to tell the Jews to leave to any other place, and to criticize Gedolim in this way. Usur l'shmoya dvorim keila. It's forbidden to hear such words, and certainly to say it is forbidden. So he says, the only reason I'm responding to you is because I see you've been influenced by the street, by people saying this on the street, but you yourself, your heart is pure, and if I set you straight, you'll accept what I'm going to say, and therefore I'm going to tell you very clear things that you should understand. So he says, first of all, many of these Gedolim who you are criticizing, like the Chafetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Eiser, I knew them personally. And I can tell you that we have no understanding of how great their minds were. We little people have no understanding. And anyone who was worthy to see how they gathered together, for example, there were was called the Knesia Gedola, where the Gedola Yisrael, under the sponsorship of Agudas Yisrael, they brought all the Gedolim together. So when they gathered together to think about the Jewish people, it was like an unbelievable sight, and how careful they were. They know that they're deciding the future of the Jewish people. They how serious they took their deliberations together. So and he says anyone who was standing in the room when the Chafetz Chaim and the Reb Chaim Eiser and Reb Chaim Brisker, when they were sitting, he felt the Shechina is here. Hashem is with them in the room. You could sense how holy this gathering was, and there was Ruach HaKodesh over there. And he says their gathering compared to other Jewish gatherings of not tzaddikim like this is Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'chol. It's a separating between holy and secular. He says, and you probably know what Rabbi Chanan Wasserman Shlita, who he was the Talmud Muvik, the special Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim. So he calls him Shlita, which means may he live for many long years. Unfortunately, Rav Dessler did not know that at that time Rabbi Chanan Wasserman had already been killed in the Kovna ghetto. He wasn't aware of this. So he refers to him as if he's still living, which unfortunately he wasn't. Rabbi Chanan was visiting in America, and he could have stayed in America and saved himself. He says, I cannot leave my sheep. I'm the leader. I have to go back, to even though they're in danger. He knew he's putting himself in mortal danger, but he felt the responsibility to be with his brethren, and he lost his life in the Kovna ghetto. So he says, you probably know what Rabbi Chanan, how great he speaks about his Rebbe, the Chafetz Chaim. And he says Rabbi Chanan himself is a great gadol. So certainly, he what he says about his Rebbe, how great his Rebbe was. So he says, in other words, we're talking about, the bottom line, we're talking about Torah giants. Now, I just want to relate to you two stories. When we're speaking about Torah giants, we're speaking about, you know, people will say that soon we're going to see what this has to do with Purim. This is all a lead up to what this has to do with Purim. But, you know, there are unfortunately many people in the Jewish nation today who, when they hear what a gadol says, and they think the gadol is wrong. So they think, you know, my mind is equal to the gadol, and I'll challenge the gadol. The gadol says this, I think he's wrong. And not only do I think he's wrong, but this is what the Michtam Eliyahu is going to speak about. I think he's dead wrong. I think I see the reality in front of me, which the Michtam Eliyahu calls b'chush. I see what the real answer is, and the gadol is wrong. Unfortunately, there are many people who they're from, and they learn Daf Yomi, and they go to shul, and they're Shomer Shabbos, etc. Fine, but in this one area, they lack Emunas Chachamim. The pasuk says, You shouldn't deviate from what the gadol of your generation tells you. Yamin I smile, right or left. So Rashi brings a sefri. Afilo I'm lecha yamin shehu smile, val smile shehu yamin. Even if he tells you what you think is your right hand, he tells you, no, that's your left hand. And what you think is your left hand, he tells you, that's your right hand. In other words, he's telling you something which in your eyes you think that the metzias, the reality, is just the opposite. You still have an obligation to listen to the Talmud Chacham. And we're going to see an example of this in the story of Purim. I just wanted, as a preface to our discussion here today, to tell you that this is not only about the Chafetz Chaim and the Ger Rebbe and Reb Chaim Ozer Grzesinski and Reb Chaim Brisker, who lived one generation before us in the wartime. Maybe it's two generations now. It's about Gedolim of our time. There are two stories of Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who's the son of the Stipler Rebbe. One story you may have seen was sent around in an email. And there's another story I heard from the person himself. Unfortunately, there are times when stories are sent by email and the stories aren't true. So we'll say over the story, I'm assuming it's true. The second story, I spoke to the person who it happened to, who's a relative of my son-in-law, his uncle, and he told me this happened to himself. Let me tell you the first story, which was circulated, where a two-year-old boy was brought to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and his father asked, can you help with the upshare? And I want to cut the hair of the boy. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky saw the boy looked young. He said, how old is he? He's 2 years and a month. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, come back next year when he'll be 3 years old. That's when you upshare and you cut the hair. The minig of some people have a minig to cut the hair at three. It's at 3 years old, not before three. So the man said, I would like to, but unfortunately, the doctors found a tumor, a brain tumor, and they give him only a very short while to live. He's not going to make it till the third year. Reb Chaim Kanievsky said, let me have your son for a moment. He took the boy in the back of the house. He came back a short while later, and he said, I'll see you next year. We'll do the upsharing by his third birthday. So, okay, Reb Chaim settled the next year. So a few days later, he went to the doctors to check up for the tumor. And the doctors look at the tumor and they say, oh, the machine must be broken because they don't see the tumor. So there's come back tomorrow, we'll fix the machine. So next day, they checked someone else, the tumor, and the machine worked perfectly. They saw the tumor. They checked his child again. They don't see the tumor. They finally realized there's no more tumor. It's not the machine was broken and had to be fixed. There's no tumor. What happened to the tumor? A nest happened. It disappeared. So he went back to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and he said, what did you do with my son? The tumor went away. The doctor said it was a miracle. What did you do when you took him to the back of the house? What did you do with my son? He said that every year I finish the whole Torah. It's known that Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Safra, Safri, Tesefta, Shulchan Aruch, he learns everything a whole year. He writes a Sefer, this year I don't think he writes a Sefer, because there's no leap year. He has organized that every day he's able to, by learning a certain amount every day, he finishes the whole Torah every year, and he makes a Siyam. But he has a problem whenever there's a leap year. So he has a whole extra month, Adar Sheni. And he finished already Adar Aleph. What's he going to do in that month? So that month he writes a Sefer to keep himself busy. Then he starts again his Sefer. He's unbelievable. So whenever he makes a Siyam on the whole Torah, they have a Suda and they have wine. And he makes a Brach on it. So that wine that's from the Siyam, that he gave the boy to drink a little bit of it. And apparently that has so much Kedusha, that wine from that Siyam HaTorah that Reb Chaim Kanievsky makes, that the tumor went away. So this was the email story, and we assume it's an MSA story. The other story is with someone I spoke to who told me that he was with his wife in Eretz Yisrael, and his wife wakes up in the middle of the night, and she feels like she can't move. She feels very heavy. She wakes up her husband, and anyway, to make a long story short, there was a problem with the stove, and there was carbon monoxide. And had they slept another 2 hours, they wouldn't be living anymore. And that's why she felt it was that made her feel that she can't move. And she said she heard a voice like telling her, "Get up now, wake up, or you won't wake up anymore." There was some voice. The story that has to do with Reb Chaim Kanievsky is that a few days earlier, her son had been by Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky, out of the blue, asked him, "Is your mother okay?" He said, "Yeah, my mother's fine, no problem. She's not sick or anything." So Reb Chaim Kanievsky gave a bracha, which he usually does by people who are sick. I don't know the exact words of the bracha, l'chaim or l'sholem, whatever. He vinched on, he gave a bracha, and this was like 2 or 3 days before this incident happened. And when later, when they thought back, Reb Chaim sensed that something is happening with his mother. This is about a person who finishes the whole Torah, who's one of the greatest gedolim of our generation, Rabbi Yashia's son-in-law. And so in other words, we're talking about giant people who, Baruch Hashem, we still have some, even in our low generation, we still have such men, giants of Torah. So when they say something, this is the lesson which we're going to learn from Purim. From Purim, we're going to learn that this was, according to the Michtav Melio, one of the major areas that caused Klal Yisrael to be in danger, that they could have been, chas v'shalom, annihilated by Haman, and they did tshuva on this fact, and this saved them. Where do we see this idea that Klal Yisrael had a lack of belief in Chachamim, and they did tshuva on it? So the Michtav Melio says a thought from Rab Simcha Zissel, who was called the Altar of Kelm. He was the Mashgiach in the Kelm Yeshiva, and every Mashgiach was called the Altar. The Altar was like a title of endearment that the Bachurim felt he's the old one, as he's the wise one. That was like a special title. You have the Altar of Navardik, the Altar of Slabotke, and this he was the Altar of Kelm. So Rab Simcha Zissel said that the whole story of Megillas Esther took 9 years. From the 3rd year of Achashverosh's rule until the 12th year of Achashverosh's rule. The Medrash says that they came to Mordechai, they were invited to the king's Suda, and they came to Mordechai and they said, "Should we go to the Suda or not?" So Mordechai said, "Al telchu, do not go. Because if you go, the Sutton is going to have Pischan Peh. Look at the Jews, Hashem, look, you see, they enjoyed the Suda of that Russia. They're getting close to the Goyim. You have to stay away." But lo yikshivu loy, they didn't listen to Mordechai, who was the Gadol Ador. He was the greatest of the generation. And what did they say to Mordechai? They said, "How can we stay away? It's pekuach nefesh. We're endangering ourselves because this foolish king Achashverosh, if we don't come, chas v'shalom, he's going to kill out all the Jews. All the other nations of his melucha are coming to give him, pay him homage, and to respect him. And the Jews are not coming." So this was a holiday to commemorate his 3rd year of becoming a king. "And if the Jews will not send anyone, we're in danger of our lives." They didn't listen, and they went. What happened to them? Did any punishment happen to them from Hashem? Nothing. 9 years later, which was the 12th year of Achashverosh's rule, when Haman was already had a big position, and he commanded everyone has to bow down to him, and he wore like an avodah zara around his neck, but Chazal tell us that you were basically allowed to bow down. It's a whole discussion, a complicated Talmudic discussion, but no one accepted what him as a god or what he wore around his neck as a god. So according to the halacha, they were allowed to bow down. But Mordechai, and he decided, "I am going to set an example, even if I'm endangering my life." There's a halacha that we know 3 averes in the Torah, yarug val yavri, you have to give up your life for. Gili Araya, Shvichas Dam, and Avodah Zarah. Marriages that are forbidden, to murder someone, and idolatry, to serve Avodah Zarah. Those, if someone says, do these averes, or I'm going to take your life, you have to let your life be taken. However, where anything else, let's say someone comes with a gun and says, either eat this piece of pig, this pork, or I'll kill you, there you have to eat the pork. Because we have a halach that says in the Torah, Pasuk, v'chai bohem, v'loy shiyamis bohem. All the dinim of the Torah are given that we should live, not that we should die through them. The only three you have to give up your life are those three that we mentioned before. So here we said it was not considered real avodah zarah. So how is Mordechai allowed to endanger his own life? The answer is that the Mefarshim tell us that a gadol hador, the greatest of the generation, who wants to set an example, and the Michtav Meliol suggests that he was trying to tell the Jews 9 years ago, Mordechai is still reminding them, you did something wrong. You got too close to Achashverosh the Goy, who was trying to influence you, and look how far I'm staying away from Haman, and for what Haman represents. You have to make a separation away from the Goyim. And I'm ready to give up my life. I want to teach you this point of what you did in Avera 9 years ago. Now, what was the Jewish reaction? The Jewish reaction was, Mordechai, you're crazy. Bow down. If you don't bow down to Haman, Haman is going to kill us all. Right? And Mordechai did not bow down. So now came the Gzeira that Lahashmid or Lahareg or Lahabed is Kol HaYehudim. All the Jews have to get killed. This was Haman's idea. Achashverosh agreed. So now, what does the person who's looking at these events, what does he think? He thinks, what caused this terrible decree? You know what caused it? Our arch enemy. You know who's our arch enemy? Not Haman, Mordechai. That's what the Jews said. The myth of Milyo in another place brings down that Rava said in the name, Rava said, Omar Knesset Yisrael Omra, Re'u Ma Asali Yehudi. Look what Yehudi, the Jewish man, who is the Jewish man? The Jewish man was David, who comes from Yehuda. Uma Shilem Li Yemini. And look what the person who comes from Binyamin caused me. Ma Asali Yehudi. The Likatli Lashimi, the Isyaladim named Mordechai, the Mikni Behaman. Our arch enemy Mordechai, who's getting Haman upset at us, and he's decreeing, let all the Jews die. You know who Mordechai comes from? Mordechai comes from Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera insulted David. David had a right to kill him, but David did not kill him. So because David, who comes from Yehuda, Yehudi, did not kill Shimi ben Gera, So what came out of Shimi ben Gera? Mordechai? And Mordechai now is making Haman against us. And who let Haman be born? Uma Shilem Li Yemini. Look what the person from Binyamin paid me. Who's the person from Binyamin? Shaul HaMelech. Because Shaul HaMelech did not kill Agag. Agag was the head of, that's the Haftorah this week we're going to learn about, Agag, how Shaul did not kill Agag, who was the melech of Amalek. He didn't kill him. And as a result, till Shmuel killed Agag, as a result, meanwhile, Agag had a child, and eventually from that child came out Haman. So because David didn't kill Shimi, came out Mordechai. And because Binyamin Yemini from Sheba Binyamin didn't kill Agag, came out Haman. So look what David and Shaul caused, that now I have this catastrophe. What's the catastrophe? The catastrophe is that David is alive, and David left over Shimi that caused Mordechai, and Shaul left over Agag that caused Haman. So that's how the Jews were complaining to Hashem. And then the Medrash says, Omer le Yisrael, the Jews said to Mordechai, Tehei Yodeya, you should know, Sha'ata mapileinu becherev shel zeh Russia. You are causing us to get killed by the sword of this Russia. So that's how the Jews looked at Mordechai. So did the Jews think that, oh no, it's our Aveira of 9 years ago that we had Nen and Misuda Shalaisa Russia, that we didn't listen to Mordechai, and we went and we mingled with the Goyim at the feast that Achashverosh made, that caused it? What, are you crazy? And that was 9 years ago. Nothing happened when nothing wrong. And right now, what do we see? Mordechai lo yichrov lo yishtachave, and right afterward comes the Gzeir of Haman. So what does our chush, what does our senses tell us? It's clear that my right hand, this is my right hand. Mordechai tells me this is my left hand. I see it's my right hand. So the same thing here. I see that what's causing it? Haman. And Chazal say no. You know what really caused it? What really caused it is because Hashem waited. He didn't punish them right away. But 9 years earlier, they didn't listen to Mordechai. That's what's causing this whole thing. So Klal Yisrael did tshuva. How did Klal Yisrael do tshuva? Because Esther told Mordechai, Lech Knois as Kol HaYehudim, gather together all the Jews. So the other area, which I don't know if we'll get to today, maybe we'll get to it next week. There are really two Averis, it comes out. I mean, one was that they were Nana from the Suda of Haman, but according to Michta Mayo, what's even greater than that is because they didn't listen to Mordechai. They didn't have a Munis HaChaman. And they also had a Machlokas. Haman said that the Bnei Yisrael are Am Mefuzar Umeforad. They are divided. So the simple pshat is they live all over your 127 lands that you're the king of. But the Chasam Sofer brings down a word. The word is bimachlokes. They are separated not just geographically like Jews are today. We live all over the world. But we're separated even when we live in a community together. We don't have achdus. We have machlokes. So Esther said to Mordechai, Lech Knosas Kol HaYehudim, let all the Jews to come together. Let us be one unit. And let us be able to tell Haman that we're going to be united from now on. We're not going to be divided. And also at the same time, we're going to listen to Mordechai. Because again, the Sutton has my Rebbe, Reb David Kronglas Zitzal, taught us that the Sutton has he has different weapons, the Sutton. One of his weapons is called Mokoim Litois. He makes people make mistakes. For example, when they built the Egel, why did they build the Egel? Because they thought Moshe died. Moshe said he's going to come back at a certain time. He didn't come back. The Sutton in heaven, the Medrash tells us, that he made as if the bed of Moshe is brought in the heavens with angels. That the Klal Yisrael saw an illusion. They thought that they were looking at the bed of Moshe, that he was dead, and it's being brought in heaven with angels being moved along the heaven. Moshe's dead. We have to have another leader. They went to the Egel. What is this power called? This power is called Mokoim Litois. The Sutton has, like a magician. A magician makes an illusion. It looks real, but it's not real. So the Mokoim Litois, the place to make a mistake, is it looks like Moshe's dead and he wasn't really. So here again, Esther invites who? Our arch enemy Haman to the Suda, right? And she calls him twice to the Suda. They could have thought, you know, Mordechai is our arch enemy, like we explained before. And Esther, she's inviting our other arch enemy, Haman, and she's getting friendly with him. So now Mordechai tells us to go and gather all together. Why should we listen to Mordechai? He's not our friend. He's an anti-Semite. He's against us. All this trouble came because he didn't bow down to Haman. But they didn't say that. When Mordechai explained to them that you should have listened to me 9 years ago, they listened to, and they didn't let the Sutton fool them again. So when they gathered together, they were really, it comes out according to this explanation, they were correcting two mistakes. The first mistake was b'machlokas, that they were usually divided. Now, lech knois es kol ha'yehudim, all the Jews, every Satmar and Lubavitch and Hasidish and Misnagdish and modern Orthodox, everybody came together. There was no divisions in Klal Yisrael. Kol HaYehudim. They all got together, and the second thing that they corrected was that they listened this time to Mordechai. Mordechai says, you have to do tshuva on this, and the Aveira is not that I bowed down to Haman. That's not why Klal Yisrael is getting a gzeira of being destroyed. The chet was, 9 years ago, you should have listened to me. So what do we see? That he ends off, Avol midas Klal Yisrael lo shuvel Hashem, ulahoidois al ha'emes. They return to Hashem, they admit the truth. They push away what looks like that it's the real thing. Asher yatzig lefon of hayetzer lichbor b'rabbaisov. The Yetzer Hara says, don't listen to the rabbis. Don't listen to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Don't listen to the Chavetz Chaim. I see it different. The rabbis are wrong. We hear this many times. And this is the lesson. He says here a very powerful statement. Chesaron akoros as batlos l'umas rabbeinu. If someone doesn't have the mida of giving in, of subordinating himself to what his rebbeim say, zehu shoyrish kol chatas utchilas kol churban rachmana litzlan. This is the beginning of all destruction. There's no greater schus, no greater merit to save the Jewish people than to have faith in what the rabbis say. If the great gedolim tell us something, we have to have faith in them. We have to listen. They are the greatest. They have it. They're inside with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like we see, Reb Chaim Kanievsky does unbelievable things, like Nissim, even in our time, we have such a great man. So when we hear the Gedolim tell us something, we have to be machni ourselves, even though we think they're saying our right hand is left, even though if you looked at the facts of the Megillah, you would think that Mordechai's making a big mistake. It's not what we did 9 years ago, it's because you didn't bow down. And the truth that the Medrash tells us is Mordechai, of course, was right. It was the chet of 9 years ago. It was not what Mordechai did. When the Jews accepted that, and they listened that we got to get together, and we have to do tshuva, and we have to fast, and whatever Mordechai tells us, from now on we're going to listen to the Amunas Chacham, we're going to listen to what the Gadol Hador says, even though we think differently, that's the greatest chus of Klal Yisrael. This was the letter that the Michtav Melio wrote to answer the person who was criticizing the Gedolim, that the Gedolim could have saved the Jewish people in Europe if they would have told the Jews to move to Eretz Yisrael. It's their fault that this all happened. This was the way that the Michtav Melio was trying to answer what this person was complaining about. And unfortunately, we're running out of time. Mircham, next week, we will go into the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. It'll be, unfortunately, it'll be on Shushan Purim. So, and Mircham, next Wednesday we'll give it. It'll be that we'll just say Bekitzer that one of the reasons that are given for the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is to counter what Haman said. Haman said that the Jewish people are am mefuzur meforad bimachlokas. They're dispersed and divided in argument. To counter that, we give shlachmanis to each other to show that we want to be mar be'achva v'reyes. We want to increase brotherhood and friendship, not like Haman accused us of. So the truth is that it's bigger mitzvah to give shlachmanis to someone you're not so friendly with than someone you're friendly. Most people give shlachmanis to people they're very close to. That's also important. They might get upset if you don't. But many times, maybe it's better to someone you're close to says, you know, I'm close to you. I don't have to give you a present to show I'm close to you. But rather, spend your time in developing friendships with people you're not so close to, because the main point of Shlachmanis, according to this explanation, is to further that all the Jewish people should become one, and one of the ways to do it is by sending Shlachmanis to each other, that increases friendship amongst the Jewish people.